Welcome to State of Affairs. I'm Julie Credens. What do you do when payday rolls around? Do you first set aside money for savings and retirement, pay off your credit cards or other bills, and then carefully spend the remainder, looking for the best bargains, using coupons, comparison shopping, or just waiting until you save enough to make some big purchase? Well, if you're like most of us, that just doesn't happen. I mean, sure, we might have some of our paycheck diverted to our 401k, but from there, it's usually spend first, regret it later. Or we turn to credit cards to cover the gap if we don't have enough cash on hand without realizing the huge debt gap we're creating over time. So this hour, let's consider what life could be like if we did live more frugally. How do we define the quality of our life, and how does that translate to how we handle our finances or how we spend our money? Our guests are Steve and Annette Economidis, authors of the New York Times bestseller, America's Cheapest Family Gets You Right on the Money. As we learn, they'll raise five kids, pay cash for their cars, don't use a credit card, they paid off their first home in 9 years, all on an average income of about $35,000 a year. Now, Steve spent 23 years in the graphics and advertising industry in Phoenix, Arizona. Annette was a stay-at-home mom. They launched their bi-monthly newsletter, The Home Economizer, in 2003, and they've subsequently appeared on Good Morning America, on National Public Radio, in Good Housekeeping. I understand the guys are doing a segment for 2020 coming up soon. So joining us from their home in Scottsdale, Arizona, a welcome to Steve and Annette Economidis. Hello.
Good morning, Julie.
You're all over. You're all over the place suddenly in the last few years.
Well, saving money is a hot topic.
Yeah, absolutely. Look at the economy. And yeah, it's no wonder that people are saying, what am I going to do? The number to join our conversation is 814-TALK. That's 814-8255 or toll-free 877-814-TALK. You can also send a question or comment by email to SOA@WFPL.org. We're hoping to hear from you this hour, some strategies you have for saving money, or maybe some trouble you have saving money. You're looking for advice from Steve and Annette. Give us a call, 814-TALK. But first, folks, briefly, how did you two and your five kids come to be known as America's Cheapest Family, which I know is a title that you've had to wrestle with a little bit, but you have accepted it nonetheless. How did that come about?
We did. And actually, it first started locally when we launched our newsletter and all the local news people heard about it. And we were on an NBC station here, and they dubbed us the cheapest family in the valley. And then shortly after that, we ended up on Good Morning America, and they gave us the name America's Cheapest Family. And at first we were like, ooh, I don't know if we like this. But then we decided, you know what, if it gets the message out there, that frugality does not have to be deprivation, and it can be fun, and it gives us a platform to really share our message, then we're going to be okay with it. So right. We just went from there.
And we also know that there are some families out of necessity who have to actually live cheaper or more frugally than we do. We are not the most frugal, cheapest family out there, but we have learned a lot of principles that work, and we're encouraging families that they don't have to buy into the $8,000 worth of credit card debt, you know, and struggling to make payments every month. There's a better way to live.
Well, you know, your story, I told a few facts of your history and your marriage since, I think it was 82, you're married?
Right.
You know, what was the upbringing that the two of you had in terms of money management, and when you came together as a couple, what were those early decisions you made that have kept you out of debt and have kept you, or started you on this path, I should say?
Well, it's interesting. We're both raised kind of similarly. I can't even say that word. Similarly. I was raised in Chicago. My dad was a commercial photographer, and he taught me to work. He took me to work with him. I'd deliver photos in downtown Chicago on a bicycle for him, and he paid me. And he had the 401 dad plan, where if I put money in the bank, he'd match it. So he encouraged me to save, but he never taught me how to really be a wise consumer or manager of my money. But I did learn to work.
Mm-hmm. And I grew up in a similarly middle-class home where my dad was an engineer, but my mom, you know, liked to shop at the JCPenney's bargain basement, and every once in a while we'd do some garage sales. Not a lot, but, you know, they were okay with finding solutions, cheaper solutions to get us what we needed. But it didn't really get perfected until we got married and we decided that I was going to stay home. I begged, actually, Steve to say, let me stay home because I want to learn what it was to be all about this homemaking thing. And then Steve was not earning very much money back then.
I was earning $6.50 an hour as a paste-up artist. And Annette said, you know what? I'm going to stay home, and I'm going to stretch this money until it begs for mercy. So every day I'd come home from work, and she said, I returned this, I did this, I bought this, I saved money on this. And she had a whole list of the things she did every day. She was going to be excellent at managing our home.
Now, what was interesting, too, Annette, is that you relate in your biography that growing up and as a teen, you had absolutely no interest in like cooking or homemaking and, you know.
Yeah, my favorite thing was to go to the mall and spend my whole paycheck on clothes when I was a teenager.
So you see, for those young folks who are there now, they can see what life can be like. Now you're freezing 18, 20 meals. You're cooking, a month's worth of meals on one day. You're freezing them all, and you are the domestic goddess in many ways.
Well, it certainly makes life less stressful around here to be a little bit more organized and to plan ahead a whole lot more than I used to.
Right. And, you know, it's interesting, you mentioned it just at the beginning, you talk about the description, you know, America's cheapest family, but you go on to write about really the dearth of positive expressions for people who like to live frugally. You talk about, well, they're called misers or tightwads or what are those. What do you think that says about our culture?
Nobody likes to be thought of as someone who can't spend money or doesn't spend money or holds on to it. We've got the Ebenezer Scrooge mentality, you know, but the truth is that our grandparents or parents who grew up in the Depression were most happy when they were careful with their money and everything, nothing got wasted.
Right.
They were careful, they planned. Think about life on the farm. We used to read the
Little House on the Prairie
books. People in prairie days, they didn't waste a thing. Mm. Everything had a purpose and it was planned out for the year, otherwise they didn't survive. And we've lost that in our affluent society.
I guess the word would be resourceful. You know, we've lost that in the culture today that we live in. We've lost being resourceful. We're so wasteful. There was a story where it talked about someone from a foreign country here in America, and he said he could supply a whole village with what they needed off the trash in our neighborhoods.
Yeah, we were helping a woman move out of a house after a nasty divorce, and we're walking through the house, boxing things up, and she had things everywhere. She had boxes of detergent in three parts of her house. She overbought. You know, we because we're disorganized, we buy more than we need, and we don't use it because we can't find it.
Right.
There's no glory in that.
Well, and we've long recognized that we are an instant gratification society. And more so than that, too, it seems like, well, but everybody does that. I mean, everybody uses their credit cards, and that's just the American way. In a sad way, it is the American way.
Right. Right. I really think we need to get a better grip on debt and what it really does to us. We're getting letters weekly, every day, from people that have lost their jobs. And when you're up to your eyeballs in debt, or there's a disability or a divorce, or, you know, you give birth to a handicapped child, your whole world turns upside down when you are up to your eyeballs in debt. Trying to survive is so much more difficult.
But everybody, you know, this is January, and the number two New Year's resolution is to get out of debt.
Mm.
The biggest problem is a mental block, and that is, I don't know how to do it. I just have no idea where to start. And we outline that in our book, and we talk about how you start with little steps, and you don't have to get to the super-duper black belt tightwad level immediately. So
well,
start with little steps.
And that's very important because we were talking before the show, you know, I've glanced through other books of similar topics, and it does seem, as I said, so draconian in a way, like it's kind of all or nothing. And, mm-hmm. you know, if you fail at doing this, then, you know, you're hopeless. You'll never get out of debt. But what I love about the book is that you offer different levels of involvement, you know, like first dipping your toe in and saying, okay, well, I can handle that, and then
right.
and maybe getting a little bit more. But what I especially enjoyed, the last couple chapters, I mean, there's a lot of practical advice, certainly. We'll get to that this hour, groceries, utilities, housing, these different areas. But the final chapters called Attitudes and the Final Payoff are much more philosophical in nature. And I wonder if you could expand on that a little bit, the benefits of living thrifty, that it's not just about the money.
Right. Relationships are so important. And I think in the society that we're living in today, the focus is how much money can you earn and how much status can you buy, and we've lost track of what should be really important. And, you know, there's lots of circumstances that can push us in that direction. You know, if you don't have a home that taught you how to manage your money and you just kind of get sucked into the culture that we're living in, where are you going to start? How are you going to know what to do?
If you don't have a home where you sit down together for meals, you know, how are you going to relate to each other? And so we kind of back off of the soccer mom mentality and say, you know, we're going to do things different. And that starts with an attitude that people are more important than possessions. And you know what? The possessions come. It's easy to find stuff that you want. But building relationships takes time, spending time with your kids, helping launch them so that they don't come back through the revolving door 10 times because they don't know how to manage their money once they've left the house. Those are all important principles.
You know, and it seems to me, too, that you don't prescribe the same sort of budget or priorities for anyone because, you know, cutting back is a very individual thing, isn't it? I mean, someone might not want to sacrifice their cable.
Right.
But they're perfectly happy to cut their health club membership, their magazines. Like, we all have our certain, those things that, though it may seem frivolous to others, there are some things we don't want to live without.
Right.
There is no one budget for any person.
Right. We call those things sacred cows. And we were helping a couple get out of debt once, and their sacred cow was the newspaper. And so we challenged Paul, and we said, look, Paul, we've got your budget here, and you realize that spending 20-some dollars a month for your newspaper really, I mean, you could do it, but you're going to have to cut somewhere else. So we said, why don't you think about it for a week? And he came back a week later, and he said, you know, I realized that somebody brings the newspaper into the break room at work every day. I don't need to buy it.
Well,
he gave it up.
And it was just a temporary thing, mm-hmm. you know, because they needed to kind of get themselves upright. So, you know, we said, hey, just do this for a little while. We're not saying you can't ever buy the newspaper for the rest of your life, but there's so many things that we fritter our money away on. Starbucks every morning. Do you know
don't
what,
push on that button.
Do you know what that, well, it could be Jamba yeah. Juice. It could be, you know,
right.
Do you know what that stuff adds up to, or going out to eat for lunch every single day?
I figured out if you went out to lunch every day, now this was a few years ago, and you spent $5.
And that's conservative, really.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, $5 a day. You know, maybe you end up with super high cholesterol, too. But you go out, and $5 a day, 50 weeks a month, that's $1,500 a year. So, you know, if you go $7 or $10 a day, you're really going to jack that up. And if you look at it and say, you know, we don't tell people don't do it at all. We tell them start with bringing your lunch 2 days a week.
Right.
And what we would do is Annette has become a phenomenal cook. And so what we do is we have leftovers from the meal the night before. I pack it up in a microwavable container, and I bring it to work. And inevitably, when I'd heat it up, somebody come over and say, well, that smells really good. What is that? You know, and they'd want the recipe.
Well, you know, I think we'll go to break here in just a minute, but I think what is interesting is that you guys are sort of refashioning the idea of frugality, that it, you know, again, it isn't living in a rundown place with shabby secondhand furniture or shabby clothes, or and there's not a shame to it. People need to get over themselves and you know, be proud of, hey, I got this new bed frame for $50. Doesn't it look great?
We sure hope that's exactly what we're doing.
So when we come back more, we'll get into some sort of practical advice and ideas with Steve and Annette Economidis. Have you tried to live more frugally, to stretch your dollars? How do you do it? Or maybe you're looking for some advice on making your money go farther, some specific areas that are challenging for you. 814-TALK, 814-8255, or toll-free 877-814-TALK. Or send an email to soa@wfpl.org. You're listening to State of Affairs on WFPL. Welcome back to State of Affairs. I'm Julie Credens. We're talking with Annette and Steve Economidis, authors of the New York Times bestseller, America's Cheapest Family Gets You Right on the Money. They also write a bi-monthly newsletter, The Home Economizer. And this hour, they're joining us from their home in Scottsdale, Arizona. But we want to hear from you, too. What are some of your strategies for saving money and spending it wisely? What do you try to teach your kids about the value of money? How successful have you been in that area? 814-TALK, 814-8255, or toll-free 877-814-TALK. We have a lot of people waiting to join in, but I beg their patience for just a couple of minutes, because before we go to calls, Annette and Steve, let's talk just briefly about what you consider, I think, in your book to be the most important chapter, and that is on budgeting. You say the cornerstone of family finances. And, you know, do people even know how to budget anymore? I think most of us carry around this idea in our head of how much we make, but it never quite makes it to paper.
Right.
You know, there's a misconception of what a budget is, or maybe we've just redefined it. I don't know what that is, but if you look at any successful business, they've always got one person, whether he's the controller, the accounting department, whatever it is, they've got somebody who's watching what's happening with the money, putting out a monthly report, controlling where the money goes. And in our homes, we've forgotten how to do that. You know, we work hard every day earning money, and we come home and we want to relax. And what we've discovered is probably the best tool we've ever had is coming up with a plan for spending and saving our money. And we call it a budget, but it's really a spending plan. And it started kind of like the old envelope system, where you take your paycheck and put cash in different envelopes, some for the rent, some for food, some for clothes, some for car maintenance and gas. And we've expanded that and done it on paper. People do it on computers. But the point is, you've got to have a regular system that manages the income that you have. Otherwise, it's going to be frittered away.
And something our budget system does that a lot of other computer ones don't do is we save in advance of purchases. So in other words, if you know that you've got to buy school clothes once a year, then you need to be putting a little bit of money away each paycheck so that when July rolls around, you've got that lump of money saved to go out and buy school clothes. Same with Christmas. Same with homeowners insurance, auto insurance. A lot of these expenses only occur every 6 months or once a year, and many times they're surprises or emergencies for most people.
But the point is, if you don't have a way to manage it, you just put all that money into a checking account or savings account, you don't know what that money is there for. So we break it into little subcategories, and we track it on paper. So I know when it's time to buy Annette a Christmas present, I go to my gift account page, and I look there, and I've got, $300 in there. Well, gosh, I can buy her something pretty nice.
Good for you, Annette.
But if I just looked at the whole checkbook, I may have $5,000 or $6,000 or $10,000 in there. Can I spend $500? Mm-hmm. I don't know, because I don't know what that money's all there for.
Well, you know, if you've never made a budget before, there's kind of a chicken and egg thing about it, though, isn't there? You know, mm-hmm. I've read that it's best to first track how you spend your money for a few months instead
sure.
of... It's either that, or you sit down and you say, okay, well, how much am I going to spend on this? Well, sometimes it's a fixed expense. Sometimes it's flexible. What's a good, again, before we get to calls, just quick, a good way to start? What do we start with?
In the book, we have a budget worksheet, and you kind of guesstimate what you're spending on each category. And we ask a lot of questions on that sheet. Things like, you know, what are you spending on babysitters? What are you spending on clothes, your auto insurance? I mean, we go into all the details that a lot of people don't think about. Start there, write that down, get your best estimate. Then for the next 30 days or so, watch what you're spending.
Mm-hmm.
And over time, you're going to self-adjust. And it becomes truly your own personal budget. We can't tell you what to spend, you know, but you can tell yourself what you are spending and then make the decision whether you're going to cut back. I didn't realize I'm spending $150 a month going to Starbucks.
Mm-hmm.
That's crazy. You know, I'm not going to do that anymore because I want to pay off my car.
And eventually you'll look at your paycheck and you'll say, okay, this is my paycheck. Now, where should I put this money? Mm-hmm. Rather than saying, okay, well, I need something, let me go buy it. You'll first deal with your paycheck first and then figure out, okay, this is how much money I have set aside for this. Now I need to come up with a solution to get what I need.
So patience is key, too.
Mm-hmm.
We'll talk about that this hour. Let's go to the phones, though, and see what you have to say. Kevin, thanks so much for waiting. And go ahead, please.
Hello, education. Hello.
Kevin, are you with us?
Yes.
Yeah, go ahead, please. Sorry, thanks for waiting. And go ahead.
Yes, my name is Kevin. I'm calling from Louisville. And I own a small business that I recently started with myself and my wife. And we have two small children. And I was calling to get some advice on how to save some money for office supplies and things like that for starting up a small business.
Now, do you have separate budgets at this point, or is it all one pool of money that you're trying to start this business with, Kevin?
No, we have a separate budget for the home and for the business.
Okay. All right. Steve and Annette, any startup advice for Kevin?
Well, we have a small business too, Kevin. And, you know, what we've done is we use the same budgeting system for our business that we do for our home. And that means that out of everything that we take in, we set aside a percentage for our newsletter, essentially to print our newsletter. Every subscription we get, we set aside money for that. And then we put a little bit in for office supplies, a little bit in for computer maintenance, those kind of things. So we're always saving out of the money we take in before we pay ourselves to make sure that we have the money to run the business.
But I think also what you're asking, Kevin, is where are the good deals for the office supplies? And, you know, the normal stores like Office Max and Staples, sometimes if your business is registered with them, they'll send you coupons for $10 off 50 or things like that. So we'll always use a coupon if we have to go to a place like that. Craigslist is a great way to find used stuff. So if you need filing cabinets or shelves or things like that. And then we have something called ASU Surplus.
A lot of universities have surplus departments where they get rid of equipment they don't need. So I picked up computer monitors there for $10.
Wow.
So there's always ways to find it. eBay is a great source for toner cartridges for your copiers. I don't buy remanufactured cartridges. I always buy new ones, but I've gotten them for about 30% of the retail price.
Excellent. Oh, go ahead, Annette. Yes.
I was going to say, does that help, Kevin?
Yes, that helped greatly.
Okay. Kevin, thanks very much for calling. We appreciate that. You know, you guys were mentioning, you know, you have the typical office stores that will offer discounts, but you mentioned some other stores throughout your book for different things that you might want to consider as alternative sources, like a Big Lots, for example, or Odd Lot stores, where, you know, maybe you can pick up a paper shredder for an office or
right.
something. Maybe it's not this year's model, but it still serves the purpose.
Exactly.
You know? Now, you got to remember that finding deals, it's a kind of a trade-off. You can go plunk down retail, mm-hmm. or you can spend a little bit of your time to go research this stuff. But after a while, you're going to come up with your standard sources that when it's time to buy some office supplies, well, you know, I need a toner cartridge. I'm not going to the store. I know I can spend $127 at Office Max,
mm-hmm.
but I also know in the past I've gotten them for $30 on eBay.
Right.
So you get your standards, and then you don't have to spend the time anymore.
Look for those alternate sources.
Right.
Okay, let's go back to the phones. And Glenn in Frankfurt, you're next. What's on your mind?
Hi, I was just talking about, like, the culture that you grow up in, and I'm in my early 60s now, but when I was coming of age through college, it was sort of the thing to be very simple. We were in this peer group where being simple was fun, and I remember saying when we were going to leave college, we were telling each other that we know we can be happy living simply. Can we do this for the rest of our lives when we get real jobs? And so our baseline was always the simplicity and knowing we could be happy, and we've done so. We've stayed in a very modest 1,200 square foot house, and all of our life. I was able to retire at 58. We've saved a lot of money that way. I've made my own furniture. A lot of these different things. What the interesting thing is that our kids though grew up in a totally different peer group where spending money and spending beyond your means was, the debt was not an issue. It was like a reality. Everybody's going to be that way. So I think the society plays a big role. And one other thing I'd like to say is that, and I think we're encouraged by the society to do this, and if everybody would be very frugal, what would happen to the economy? My wife and I often sort of wonder about that. And thank you very much.
Yeah.
Interesting. Glenn,
you raised
thank
some
you.
Great points, Glenn.
Yeah, you
oh,
did.
Oh, gosh, there's two really big ones I want to touch on, and that is who you hang out with. You're right, the peers have a great influence, and so if you're struggling to make your ends meet, you've got to stop hanging out with the people who go take the cruises and go encourage you to spend money, and find someone who doesn't think that status is derived from what you have and what you do. You know, that's critical. And the second thing you talked about was really creating a maximum lifestyle, and you made a decision that a 1,200 square foot house was enough. And what did it do for you? It kept your overhead low enough so that you could retire at 58. We're standing up and cheering for you. You did a
yes.
phenomenal job.
But you're right. It is difficult, Glenn, to raise kids today. I think that is one of the most difficult challenges. And so we're forever working with our kids, telling them, you know what, you're weird, and it's okay that you're weird. And we're all weird, and we're happy. And giving them sources for where they can find everything that their friends have, for pennies on the dollar. Like, my kids know they can go to thrift stores and get all the name brand clothes, but they're spending 10 instead of 120 on a pair of jeans.
Right.
And so they're pretty gutsy. I mean, they're forever teasing their friends, and some of their friends take them out and think they have to rehabilitate them, and, like, my oldest daughter just comes home laughing her head off, you know, when they're trying to get her to spend money. And
at the mall.
Yeah, and so it takes a lot of time to work with your kids, but it's so important to transfer those values.
Absolutely. Glenn, thanks very much for a great call. And next on the line, let's talk with Casey. Hello, Casey.
Hi.
Yes,
hi.
Go ahead.
I just wanted to share some of my tips. I think it's a great topic you guys are doing. But I have twin girls. They're about a year old. And as precious as they are, you know, it's expensive to have kids, of course, especially if you have two same age at the same time. So I just wanted to share some of the things that I've been doing to try to save money and try to keep myself from spending a lot of money. You know, when it comes to diapers and wipes, like diapers, I use the off-brand. They're just as good. Wipes, I don't really even use except at daycare. I just wash them in, you know, soap and water and use a towel to dry them off.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like I'm kind of saving the environment that way, too. When it comes to the food, I was pretty much making their baby food at home, you know, just buying fresh fruits and vegetables and then fixing them up, pureeing them, freezing them in the ice cube trays.
Right.
When it comes to toys, I do have some kind of commercial toys that have come out, not a lot, but I just reuse a lot of things at home, like the plastic containers that yogurt and ricotta cheese, cottage cheese comes in, just wash them out.
Perfect.
They make great bongos and drums. I mean, you can put little things in them, and they become shakers and rattles.
Right.
Give them spatulas, and they're banging away. And when they're all done, I can just send them off to the recycling center, and I feel, you know, really good about that, about not spending a lot of money on just, you know, it's just cheap stuff. And it really has no purpose, no educational value to it. And plus, they kind of get the lesson that you can keep reusing things and, you know, just get some benefit out of it. And with clothes, I wait for the big sales, and I just buy, you know, even much bigger sizes, but kind of save them up. And so when they're ready to move up to the next size, I can just go to my little storage container, pull them out,
You're good.
Everything else I send back to consignment or, you know, keep it if we have more children. I'll have those for future. I mean, I have a really good stash of clothes, which is nice.
Casey, but, you've got things. It sounds like you've got things well in hand with a lot of good strategies. I think you need to, maybe Casey can be a contributor to your next book, Stephen.
Yeah.
We'd love to have her.
Yeah.
You're doing great, Casey. One of the things that you touched on was the toy issue, and that's where parents spend tons and tons of money on things that they don't need. There is a great book out there written by a guy named Burton White who did a long-term study on what toys kids really play with. The book is called The First 3 Years, and he outlines at different ages what toys or items like a paper cardboard box or a bucket of water will be of incredible interest to a kid. And Casey touched on it. You know, you don't need expensive toys.
Right.
Margarine containers and spatulas and things like that. It's a great idea.
Our Tupperware closet, I call it the Tupperware closet, but it's just where we hold all of our plastic containers. And that was one of our favorite things for our kids to play in when they were little. And it actually did teach them quite a bit because they would stack the different size containers and they would reorganize everything to fit. And they had a ball playing in that.
Okay.
So you're right. And then, Casey, one more tip that one of our readers sent in to us from our newsletter. There's a group called Mothers of Multiples, and you can sign up and be part of that group. And once a year they have a sale on all their clothes. So if you've got multiples, you can get clothes for pennies on the dollar in mint condition, and it's a great way to either sell stuff or buy stuff.
It is a great idea. Casey, thanks very much, and especially kids' clothes. I mean, because they do. They grow out of it, obviously, eventually, and fairly quickly. So aside from maybe that certain special something you might want, there is no need to buy new, is there?
Right.
Let's go next to Mary calling from here in Louisville. Hello, Mary.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. Love the last name.
Yes. And I, you know,
Smith, but we changed it.
Economides, yes.
I was wondering if that was a self-fulfilling prophecy. Maybe I should change my last name. speaking of weird, we got a little bit away from weird, but now we're back with me. I have a little tip, and I'm a real lightweight in this area, I don't mind saying, but I never spend $5 bills. You know, some people put pocket change away.
Yeah.
If I buy something with a 20 and it costs a dollar, and they give me back three fives and four ones, I have to save the fives.
Oh, that's a good idea.
So they really add up, and then when I have nieces or great-nieces graduating, I give them a certain amount of money in fives, and I suggest that as a little trick.
Hey, Mary, but, whatever works. That's
but the funniest thing was when I went to buy a new car, I wanted to supplement my trade-in, so I brought them $1,000 in fives. We had a lot of fun at the dealership with that.
You know, what you're talking about, Mary, is coming up with a system that works for you. And some people, it's throwing all their change in a, you know, in a jar or whatever. But it works, and you've come up with a way to manage your excess. We have an article in the book called Dealing with Windfall. Mm. And people don't realize how often there's extra money that comes their way. And what we propose is that before you get a bonus, before you get a tax refund, before whatever, there's birthday money coming in, you have a plan for what you're going to do with that money. And our plan was basically we took 30% of any extra that came in and we used it to pay off our house. And we saved 30% for house projects and we gave a portion of that. And we had the plan and it was non-emotional before the money ever came in. And that's exactly what you've done with your $5 deal.
Absolutely. Mary, thanks very much. We had an email from Ivor. He says, my wife and I try to save by, and he lists a few things, not eating out frequently. He said, we eat out about twice a month. It's amazing how much it saves us.
Yes.
We also prioritize our desires into needs and wants. He said, they're very different things.
Mm-hmm. Excellent.
He understands it.
And he says, failing to plan is planning to fail.
That's correct.
He's got to write a book.
So we're going to take another short break. And when we come back, we're going to talk more with Steve and Annette Economidis. They are authors of the New York Times bestseller, America's Cheapest Family Gets You Right on the Money. They also write a bi-monthly newsletter, The Home Economizer. We're hoping to hear from more of you looking for some of your strategies for saving money or for spending it wisely. How do you stretch your dollars? Or maybe it's just you find it impossible to save and you're looking for some tips or advice from Steve and Annette. 814-TALK, 814-8255, or toll-free 877-814-TALK. You are listening to State of Affairs on WFPL.
State of Affairs is made possible by the University of Louisville, committed to excellence in undergraduate and graduate education. The University of Louisville, Kentucky's Metropolitan Research University, and by the members of Louisville's Public Radio Partnership.
Welcome back to State of Affairs. I'm Julie Credens. Our conversation continues now with Annette and Steve Economidis, authors of the New York Times bestseller, America's Cheapest Family Gets You Right on the Money. They also have a bi-monthly newsletter called The Home Economizer. This hour, they're joining us from their home in Scottsdale, Arizona. We'll be going back to your calls in just a moment. 814-TALK, 814-8255. Annette, Steve, how do people find you on the web?
Well, they can go to our website. We make it real easy. It's americascheapestfamily.com. And the website is full of reader tips. There's lots of free information there. They can download a shopping list. And we have a lot of the books that we have found to be really helpful. We have them in a bookstore. So we have a recommended reading list, and they can buy them for as cheap as 2 cents through Amazon. So it's really a good deal. We're all about helping people get what they want and saving money, and that's what our website's about.
Okay, very good. Let's go back to the phones. And Robbie, you're next on State of Affairs. Hello.
Hi. I'd like to tell them thanks for not just making frugal okay, but making sensibility okay. That's sensible. And that what we're doing when we're spending all this money is that we're spending our children's future.
Hmm. Yep.
In more ways than one. You're right, Robbie. Thanks very much for your comment. You know, and you talk about those big picture things, too. A previous caller talked about the environment. How much, you know, stuff ends up in landfills. And if you go to a thrift store or flea market, you realize, you know, there's really not a need to buy new. I hate to say it. And, you know, our first caller or one of our callers said you don't want to ruin the economy by people not buying new goods. But there's a lot to be found out there that's used and perfectly good.
Right.
You know, the state of Washington implemented a recycling program for clothing, and they actually use it for insulation in buildings now. because they found that the landfills were filling up with thousands of tons of clothes that were being disposed of. And you think about not only that type of waste, but people buying things that they won't wear, and the amount of fossil fuels that are needed to produce and transport these things that we're overbuying.
Right.
We have just consumed too much. I mean, and you can prove it to yourself just by going to any garage sale and looking on the tables at the things that are in brand-new packages.
Right.
We've consumed too much, and we need to stop doing that and be smarter about not only where we're spending our money but where we're using our resources.
And you mentioned insulation, Steve, and Ron wants to join us now with a word or two about that. Hello, Ron.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
Hey, Ron.
Hi, Ron.
I had to replace plaster on my walls. I got an old house in the Highlands, no insulation. While I had the walls off, I blew insulation into the walls with a leaf blower I already had, so it didn't cost me anything. $8 a bag for insulation.
Good for you.
And I was able to take the carnage off above one room. My wife's an invalid, and I have to take care of her, and I have to keep that one room very warm. I blew 7 inches of insulation up in the ceiling,
mm-hmm.
and I was able to insulate the interior wall to that room.
Excellent.
And my highest bill so far was $56 for heating. I closed off the rest of the house. That's who this house with a little radiator, electric radiator.
Right.
And I found a way to take a bath with just a bucket of water, heat it in a microwave or something.
Wow.
And siphon that down with one of those shower heads with a hose on it. I made a thing where I could just stop it.
Ron, that is so cool.
Used usually a gallon and a half of water. So I got water left over. I bring the hot water in the bedroom and let the rest of it heat that bedroom.
We would say that you are the wise owl of utility usage in our book. You're at the tightwad level, the super-duper level. But you're right, Ron. Insulating a house, we did this in our previous house, is an inexpensive way to really cut your utility. So putting insulation in the attic, insulation in the walls is a little more difficult, but it's just a good way to cut your utilities.
Ron, thanks very much. And yeah, your utilities chapter subtitled also shut the door, turn out the lights, just simple things.
Right.
Right.
There are so many ways to save. And we also propose that if you are in an area, let's say, where you have high heating oil prices, get yourself an alternate source, whether it's one of those in-the-house ceramic heaters or some other source so that you aren't bound to just one type of utility.
A wood-burning stove where you stock up on wood the previous summer?
I just picked up a bunch of logs from neighbors who cut down trees, and we have a big fireplace in our house with a heatilator on it that blows the heat into the house. So we're always looking for alternative sources so you're not tied just to one utility company.
Our guests are Annette and Steve Economidis, authors of America's Cheapest Family, gets you right on the money. We've got about 10 minutes left, and we'd love to hear more of your money-saving strategies or challenges. Maybe you're finding it really tough to get those bills paid and have something left over for savings or retirement or just allotting your money. Your questions are welcome at 814-TALK, 814-8255. We talked briefly on utilities, and certainly your book goes into much greater detail, but let's touch on a few other chapters. You start off early in the book with groceries. You say that this is one of the easiest ways to make sort of an immediate impact on your savings.
That would be correct. There's a couple of very, very quick things people could do, such as using a list when they go to the store, looking at the sale items. There's weekly flyers that go out, and they're like your lottery ticket because things will go on sale as loss leaders where the stores do not make any profit, but they get you in the store hoping you're going to buy other things, and those loss leaders are awesome to stock up on. And then planning a menu, a lot of people don't do that anymore, and it's a lost art, and just taking 15 minutes once a week to sit down and just plan your dinners if that's all you want to do to get started. You can pick simple things like barbecue chicken in the crock pot and tacos and spaghetti and meatballs and macaroni and cheese. It can be very, very simple to come up with a 7-day rotation, and then you're not tempted to hit the restaurants every night when you're tired.
Right.
Julie, the grocers expect that you will go into a store to buy 10 items, and you'll put 16 in your cart. You're going to overbuy or impulse buy 60% more than you planned on. And that's why they set up the end caps, and that's why they set up shelf interrupters on the aisle. You've got to be in control. You've got to know it. And just dollar-wise, the average family of four is spending about $8,000 a year. That's more than they're spending on their car. on food, if you can save 10%, that's $800. If you can save 20%, that's $1,600 more in your pocket that you can do with other things. And you won't change what you eat. You
right.
Just be smarter about
and
it.
And warehouse clubs are the worst because they only get certain size lots of items in, and so they really encourage impulse spending. But you'll impulse buy, and you'll spend $5 to $10 on an impulse item at a warehouse club, whereas at the grocery store, if you buy an impulse item, you might be spending $1 to $3. So I tell people, stay out of the warehouse clubs. Do not use them for your regular grocery shopping.
Well, and I'll tell you, too, some other good advice you had, and I'm guilty of this, is, and it comes down to planning and organization, which are repeated again and again as key to almost all of this, no matter what area we're talking about, and that is, I go to the grocery store too much. I may go 2-3 times a week, like,
right.
Oh, I forgot this, or I need to get this. And what your advice is to, again, depending on what level of frugality you're at right now, maybe my goal would be, okay, try to get there just once a week.
And that's,
right.
That's a great challenge to anybody who wants to cut their food bill. You'll be surprised at how much you'll save just by cutting your trips. And we've had people write in saying, yeah, I can't believe this. I saved $100 this month just by not going to the store as often and planning a little bit.
We had a couple that doesn't have children, and they wrote in and they said, you know, we said we decided to give it a try. So we spent several hours on a Saturday, both were working, and we wrote a list, and we went to like 2 or 3 places, and we just did a mega stock-up trip, and they were right. Not only did we save time, but we saved money, and we got awesome deals, and we got plenty of food.
Right. Mm-hmm. So we go shopping once a month. It takes us about 4.5 to 5 mm-hmm. hours, and we spend $350 a month to feed now 6 of us in our house.
It's just incredible.
$50 a person about, as opposed to $200 a person.
Now, you two work like a well-oiled machine. You've been doing this for many years, and you do these monthly shopping trips. That's quite amazing. But what about, you know, what if someone says, I want to live more frugally. I understand this, but my spouse or partner has no interest and, you know, doesn't want to join the team, let's say. What are some strategies for trying to forge ahead anyway?
Well, I would say don't give up hope. I mean, even at the beginning for us, Steve had offered to go grocery shopping, but he really didn't know a whole lot about how to save money at the grocery store. So initially, I would just say, okay, go pick up these few sale items. And then when he got really good at that, I said, okay, now here's a couple of coupons. Mm-hmm. Now go find these things with these coupons. And he just really got into it and saw it as a really fun game. So if you have a husband that is really, or a spouse that's really reluctant, I would say the old baby step thing. You know, if it's not a food item, but it's a, say you need shoes or something, try to talk them into trying 2 or 3 different places for shoes, and you'll hit the jackpot at one place, and you'll get excited.
Or if it's a home improvement project and one of you wants to just go out and do it, you know, maybe you say, well, let's do it, but let's get 4 quotes before we start.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just encouraging the other person to work on those wise consumer skills. But if you're, we've talked to a lot of women who just, their husbands just won't do it, they say. We say, look, you've got control over the food budget, or you've got control over how much money you spend on gas. You take control of those areas and get the savings. But you've got to start somewhere. And eventually the other person is going to see you saving, and they're going to catch the vision.
But, you know, even if you've got a husband that comes home, say you both get home from work and you're dead tired, and the husband says, oh, I really want a steak. Let's go to Ruth Chris Steakhouse or something. And you're like, you know what? Let's try something different tonight. Let's go to the grocery store, get some really nice quality steaks. We'll take them home. We'll tenderize them. We'll season them. And let's cook dinner together. Mm-hmm. And you know what? It can be really fun.
Mm-hmm. And that's a way of frugality enhancing quality of life, too. And not just about saving some bucks by not going out to eat. Now, Kim had a question. She says, how do you budget when one person has a steady paycheck and the other gets paid intermittently?
That's a good question.
Great question.
What we do is we set up regularly scheduled times to do our budget allocation. So in other words, if let's say one person gets paid every 2 weeks, the other one gets paid twice a month, we set it up to do it on the twice a month schedule. And you put the other paycheck into a holding pen,
account,
essentially.
Account.
Holding account. And then you just disperse money at that time. So you set a specific time each month. And we've done that because we've had a fluctuating income for years. When I was in the advertising business, I was on commission, and our income changed all the time. And now with our own business, sometimes there's no income, but it fluctuates greatly.
But when you have one paycheck that is really, you never know what it's going to be, then what you do is you try to base your, you prioritize your budget categories so that the most important ones get funded by that regular paycheck. Mm-hmm. And then as that variable paycheck comes in, when it's a great month and you've got a lot of money, maybe that's when you fund your Christmas account or your back to school account for clothing. That's when you start socking money away for items that only come up once a year and aren't regular expenses. Does that make sense?
Yeah, and you know, speaking of socking money away, and this next topic could and has been a show on its own, but you devote a chapter, of course, to debt. You say the American dream turns into a nightmare, and unquestionably, I'm sure the thing that keeps a lot of people up at night, financially speaking, is how to even begin to chip away at credit card debt. What are some just good first steps, no matter how overwhelmed you feel, what are some good first steps if you're in that situation?
The bills for Christmas haven't arrived yet, so there are a lot of families that are going to receive that shock in a few days. And what we need to do is, first off, you have to be tired of living the way you're living with credit card debt hanging over your head. So take those credit cards out of your wallet. Instead of being an easy way to spend, we're going to make it a little tougher. Put them somewhere where you have to intentionally take them and decide to use them. Or cut them up. That's our favorite solution. The second thing is you need to sit down for about an hour and make a list of all of the money you owe. And write it down and then categorize it or prioritize it from smallest to largest. So put your smallest debt at the top, your largest debt at the bottom. Forget the interest rate because that'll just muddle your thinking. Once you get that done, take and get your budget set up and come up with how much excess you can create a month. So if you can come up with $50 a month, you put that extra $50, pay everybody something, put the extra $50 on the smallest debt. And pretty soon, within probably 2 months, you'll have the smallest debt paid off. And we call that an emotional victory. And most people who are in debt are feeling so beat up and so depressed and so out of control. To give them this method to get control and get a success quickly is going to pay off big time.
But, Julie, you might be able to accelerate it even more, because when you actually make that list of who you owe money to and how much you owe, then you can look around your house and figure out, is there something I can liquidate here? A musical instrument, a fitness equipment, some kind of collection.
Have a garage sale.
Have a garage sale. And you'd be surprised, just halt your spending immediately. If you're normally going out to dinner 3, 4, 5 times a week, say, we are just not going to do that this week. And just try to grab as much money as you can to start paying off, like Steve said, that smallest debt. And it is amazing how wonderful it feels to start conquering things. And once you get the first two, you're on a roll. And it just starts to roll, and you're feeling good, and you've got victory. And
you'll never go back to living the way you were.
And it's much easier than people think it is.
Well, and I think you're right. It's like, just start. Just start paying it back. It's good advice. There's a lot more in their book, America's Cheapest Family Gets You Right on the Money. But we thank our callers and our guests this hour, Annette and Steve Economidis, authors of that book. They also write a bi-monthly newsletter, The Home Economizer. And again, your website, Steve?
AmericasCheapestFamily.com.
All right. Thank you both for your time. It's been a real pleasure.
Julie, it was great being with you.
Great here.
For more information about today's program, go to WFPL.org and select State of Affairs from the program list. You can email us from there or continue the conversation on our weblog at soablog.org. You can reach us by phone at 502-814-6500. State of Affairs is produced by the Public Radio Partnership with support from the University of Louisville. Robin Fisher is our producer. Our assistant is Laura Ellis. Kim Wobold was on the phones today. I'm Julie Credens. I hope you'll join us next time for another edition of State of Affairs.
The views presented on State of Affairs do not necessarily reflect those of the University of Louisville, Public Radio Partnership, or its underwriters.